Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. Ed Jordan is our guest. I'm glad to have Ed back on the show. Ed's one of our top technology experts. He's one of the world's top technology experts. And one of the best things about Ed is he's got an outstanding crystal ball. And he's going to talk to us about some of that in just a minute, some of the things he sees coming down the future. Actually, I think we're going to talk about some things he's already predicted that are now coming true. And Ed is the author of over two dozen books, including one I'm holding in my hand called Byte Wars, B-Y-T-E Wars, The Impact of September 11 on Information Technology. Ed Jordan, welcome back to the show.
I'm glad to be back.
It's good to have you back. Ed, I know you're a smart guy. I've known that for a long time. That's the reason I keep inviting you back. But my audience might not know exactly how smart you are, even though many of them have heard you on the show before, and I know they're all impressed. They write me all the time and say, boy, that Ed Jordan's a smart guy, isn't he? But you predicted something back in the early 90s that's now coming true. You actually wrote a book about this, and I want you to tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, actually it was 1989, even farther back, I had a chance to visit India to give some lectures on computer technology, and I came back just blown away by what I had seen, and wrote a couple of articles and a book in 1992 called The Decline and Fall of the American Programmer, and I said to people in my industry, in the computer industry, you know, we're in a lot of trouble because there are people over there that are 10 times cheaper and more productive, and they're turning out higher quality software, and that's a pretty effective combination. So I got carried away and predicted that by the end of the decade, the American programmer would go the way of the dodo bird.
And in those days, though, people in America imagining that India was going to suck up our high-tech programming jobs was preposterous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was preposterous for a couple of reasons. First of all, it was at a very early stage in the Indian industry. They had really just gotten themselves organized. But they've been growing at a compounded growth rate of 50%. I mean, that's almost like cancer.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
You keep that up for 10 years, and all of a sudden you've got something that's big enough to be noticeable. The other, and I think far more important thing, of course, is that all during the 1990s, when we actually had an economic boom. Remember those days? The computer industry grew fast enough to gobble up all the programmers that we could supply, all the programmers in India could supply, all the programmers everywhere, and then some, so that, you know, kids coming out of college with a degree in basket weaving could get a computer job. But that's all changed. And so now, for the last 2 or 3 years, we've been in an economy where there's a surplus of programmers, and the buyers, that is the companies that need computer help, can pick and choose. And so, you know, being normal, capitalistic, cost-conscious, profit-oriented people, they look around and say, where can we find, you know, attractively priced, high-quality work, and lo and behold, it turns out in many cases to be outside the United States.
We've been talking about this on the show before. Other experts have mentioned on the show. In fact, we've talked about, I think, Kiplinger. We've covered this issue a number of times over the last few years with the folks at Kiplinger who reported the increase in programming capability in India. And so, it's, as you say, the interesting thing is that we didn't mind it as long as it wasn't so dramatic and so noticeable. But now that things are tightening up, they're really emerging over there. And this really has a lot to do with something I've been talking and writing a lot about recently, and that's this pricing power. Ed, nobody has any pricing power anymore because of the competition. And as long as we had plenty of business, as long as we were able to grow our top line, then we didn't care. I mean, we were able to deal with it because we were able to sell more.
Sure.
But now that sales volume's off, now the pricing power issue that's been with us really for about 10 years or so is really emerging, and it's a parallel issue to me to this programming issue you're talking about.
Yeah, because it's interesting how this has come about. When I first went over there in 1989, a lot of the industry leaders there said, look, you know, we know that we're cheap, and that's enough to get our foot in the door. Mm-hmm. But they said in the long term, it's going to be quality that really matters. Mm-hmm. And so actually, even though they are, their salaries are like four or five or six times lower than ours, they've been focusing on quality more than price. But in the last couple of years, with volume off, as you say, it turns out that the very first thing that American customers, the big, you know, computer IT organizations are looking for,
right,
is low price. And even with you know, the overhead of travel and all sorts of other things, they can get Indian or Russian or Filipino programmers for like mm-hmm. a third the price that they pay here.
Ed, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, I'm going to ask Ed if this is a paradigm shift, and if it is, what's the impact of all this? Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's 22. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we're going to be visiting with our good friend, Phyllis Martin, who's going to talk to us about, or she's going to ask us the question, what's in a name? And that'll lead to some interesting discussion with Phyllis. And then after that, we're going to be visiting with a new friend, Laurel Delaney, who's going to join us, and we're going to talk about small business exporting. That's coming up in the next hour. Ed Yurden is our guest right now. He's the author of Byte Wars and about 25 other books that you can find. His last name is Y-O-U-R-D-O-N, and he put a .com on the end of that. You'll find his website and all of his books and the articles that he writes. And Ed, do you still have an e-publication that you send out?
No, I've been too busy doing other stuff to really keep that going for the last year or two, unfortunately.
But they can find your stuff there, anything that you've written. They can find a lot of that on your website.
Absolutely, yeah. 500 articles and the books, as you mentioned. Yeah,
right. Ed, you're talking about the prediction that you made in the 10 or more years ago that India was going to suck up many of our programming jobs, our computer programming jobs. People didn't believe you, but it's now come to pass. And my question is, does this qualify as a paradigm shift? I mean, is this, remember when Made in Japan was cheap, meant cheap and bad quality, and then about in the 1970s, Made in Japan started becoming the best quality, and you didn't want anything that was made, especially anything electronic or an automobile made in America, as much as you wanted it in Japan. That was a paradigm shift. Is this a similar paradigm shift?
It is. Interestingly, if you talk to a lot of American programmers about this, they'll tell you about the isolated cases they've seen where some Indian programmers have come over here and have done a bad job, and they generalize and say, you know, all Indian programmers, they may be cheap, but they're, you know, sloppy or whatever. Well, it turns out there's a quality rating. I won't go into the details of it today. It's called the SEICMM. This is a five-level scale. And level
Oh, yeah,
five.
we talk about that all the time on this show.
All right, yeah, right. Well, level five on this thing is a level of quality that's only achieved by, like, the top 1% of the computer companies in the world. Mm-hmm. 40% of the companies that have this level five rating are in India.
Wow.
And big companies like General Electric that have these other quality things like Six Sigma.
Yeah.
GE now outsources $500 million a year to India. So they're not just going over there for the cheap programmers, but they're also going because they know they can find much higher quality than in many cases they can find here.
Well, the word is value.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a combination of price and quality and availability and things of that sort. And the real paradigm shift, interestingly, is not just that programming jobs are moving over there. That, as some of the Indians are now saying, that was the low-hanging fruit. That was the mm-hmm. obvious thing to go after.
Mm-hmm.
But now basically all knowledge-working jobs. I mean, the ones that we probably, the average consumer sees the most, if he listens very carefully on the phone, is the customer service, help desk, mortgage processing, credit card follow-up, you know, if you haven't paid your MasterCard bill on time. Those calls are all going to India or to, you know, the Caribbean. I mean, India is kind of the one that we all point to, but they're certainly not the only provider of these kinds of services.
You know, Ed, I remember a few years ago there was a lot of complaints back in the 90s. There were a lot of complaints. We reported this on the show. There were a lot of complaints because there weren't enough H-1B visas.
H-1B.
H-1B visas that, you know, we needed more Indians coming over here to program.
Right.
We didn't have enough programmers. Well, the sad part is now that things are not as good over here in America, there may be some people wanting to go from America to India now, and I'm not sure they're going to let us come over there because they got plenty of folks themselves.
India graduates 350,000 engineering graduates a year.
Wow.
From universities that in many cases are at the same level as Stanford and MIT.
Hmm.
So, yeah, you're right. Well, now the paradox there that people don't realize is that the H-1B visas are a short-term issue. You know, now everybody is saying, you know, cut them back, get rid of them, blah, blah, blah. Well, the Indians would be perfectly happy in a sense because it's much cheaper for them to have the work done in India by their programmers. They don't want to put all their Indian programmers on an airplane, fly them over here,
right,
and go through all the legal hassle and put their people up in hotels and so on. They have to do that to get started, you know, to kind of establish a relationship with customers over here. But as soon as they've done that, then the next project, they'll say to the customer, tell you what, we'll leave one or two of our people here as a liaison, but we'll do all the work back in Bangalore. So that's really the move that is taking place. And then, as you and I were chatting during the break, the next frontier beyond this is China.
Mm-hmm.
The only disadvantage China has, at least in the computer area, is very limited English-speaking skills. But the Chinese government, which thinks in big numbers, says that by the end of this decade, they will have trained 1 million computer engineers to be fluent in English.
Wow.
And if you do that, you've just suddenly, you know, almost doubled the supply of computer people in the world market.
Folks, remember me talking about China being an economic tsunami that's going to wash over the rest of the world in the next 20 years? Watch out. This is just another example. And China has the big story in India is the technology issue, but in China there are a number of big stories. Not only technology, not only computer programming, but manufacturing and other things that other industries that are going to be impacted by China.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's sort of at the same place that that India was 5 or 6 or 8 years ago, at least in terms of the software stuff that I know about. So people aren't yet really focusing on it, but it's this groundswell that's starting up. It turns out that at the moment, for example, Japan is exporting a lot of their software jobs to China because there's more language skills between Chinese and Japanese than there are between Chinese and English.
Right, which is not good news for Japan either, folks.
For the same reason,
Yeah. Stand by. When we come back, we got more to come with our good friend Ed Yordan. Edward Yordan is the author of Byte Wars, The Impact of September 11 on Information Technology, and about 24 other books. Check them out at Yordan.com or wherever fine books are sold. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Ed Yordan is our guest and our good friend. His website is yordan.com, yourdon.com. Ed, recently, actually over the weekend, I think, I saw a report that unemployment now is at a 20-year high. Now, a lot of people look at the Republicans and they say it's your fault. Then somebody looks at the Democrats and says it's your fault. Well, you know what? There's enough blame to go around politically because the politicians do have their complicity in all this. But a lot of this unemployment is just the overall economy. Most of it is, but some of it is unrelated to the current condition of the economy, especially in the United States. It is related to the way jobs are moving around the globe in a way that they've never moved before. The manufacturing jobs, technology jobs. There are millions of people. I'm convinced, I don't know how many millions, but there are millions of people in the United States that when the economy comes back over the next year or two, let's say 2 years from now or 3 years from now, the economy is rocking and rolling, there will still be lots of people who won't have a job because the job that they're trained to do doesn't exist in America anymore and never will.
Well, I agree with that, but, you know, I've always been troubled by people who try to blame it on someone else, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. you know, they need to say it's my fault, because this stuff didn't happen overnight.
Exactly.
It's not
exactly.
a phenomenon. You should have seen it coming, and you got to decide whether maybe you don't need to or shouldn't work in this industry anymore, mm-hmm. or if you do want to work in this industry, you don't want to be among the 10% or 20% or 50% of the jobs that are going to disappear, which means that you've got to be more productive. You may have to accept a somewhat lower wage, but you've got to be able to persuade the employers that they can get better value. I mean, that was the word that you used a minute ago
mm-hmm.
from you than from some equally well-educated, hard-working, but lower paid person in Russia, China, India, or whatever.
Well, so we got to get training for these.
Well, one of the things I said in this book 10 years ago is you darn well better do your own training. You can't just sit around and wait for your company.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. When you say, you know, blame it on me, it's my fault that I don't have a job. I agree with you, because if you don't have the training, and I know, folks, I know I've told you the story before, but it's a great example. Ed, I talked to the manager of a Greenfield paper plant. This is a brand new paper plant. And Greenfield, if you don't know the term, folks, that just means it was built right out of the ground for, you know, brand spanking new. It wasn't an acquired plant. And it's a brand new plant. He has 400 employees. He says every employee he has uses technology in their job, every employee. And 10 years ago, they would have taken 800 employees to operate that plant. Now, that's what's going on in the marketplace.
But you've got to be one of those people who gets the technology training yourself.
That's right.
If it's not handed to you on a silver platter, you know, it's out there. It's on the Internet. It's in your library.
Mm-hmm.
You may have to work evenings and weekends, but, you know, that's what you've got to do.
You're exactly right. Didn't you also write a book called The Rise and the Resurrection?
I did.
Of the American
later,
programmer?
I wrote another book that said, well, maybe it's not, maybe, you know, maybe there's hope for us.
I'm sorry I brought that up, but, you know, Ed, I got to be fair and balanced here, Ed.
Well, at the time, I said, looks like that we're the first and the most active participants in the Internet, which, you know, 95, 96 was just
right.
beginning. And I said, we've got a couple of clever tricks that take advantage of some of our cultural strengths. What I didn't write about, but which we now see was a critical component for our success, was ready access to venture capital. Now that's what fueled the dot-com boom. Well,
right.
Unfortunately, that's now gone, too. And countries like India have got venture capital now because they've done
mm-hmm.
so well. So, you know, I'm back to being gloomy once again. You know,
well,
when I wrote that Rise and Resurrection book, it was also right at the beginning of the second Clinton administration, and you could kind of feel the Internet tidal wave just about
right.
to take off. So,
Ed,
yeah,
quickly,
I was more...
One quick question. The textile jobs that have been lost will probably never be back in the United States. At least not in our lifetime. Will the programming jobs be back?
10 or 20 or 30% of them will never come back because they're the easy, mundane. They don't require creativity, innovation,
mm-hmm.
or the stuff that we really are, I think, uniquely good at. So all of the people who kind of coasted along and did, you know, the easy software jobs, they're in trouble, I think,
yeah.
permanently.
Ed Yordan, ladies and gentlemen, check his website out when you get a chance. Ed, thank you for being here. Good job today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Ed Yordan, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back, I promise. We won't do without him for very long. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.